Today is Monday, August 23rd, 2021. This is part three of a Grand Canyon oral history interview with Stan Buse, last name spelled B-E-U-S. My name is Tom Martin. Good afternoon, Stan. How are you today?
Okay, fine. How are you doing?
Very good. Thank you for asking. We left off in part two. You had just come to Flagstaff with your wife and children,
right,
all packed in a station wagon,
yep,
and you'd gotten hauled up the hill to get to Williams because the car overheated.
Yeah, we had a trailer behind it.
Well, trailer
it
as well.
Even more of a problem. And it was a hot August afternoon. Yeah.
Can you tell me about the geology program at the Arizona Teachers College here in Flagstaff at the time that you walked into?
Okay. They'd had a single geology professor there for 2 years before, and he was just leaving. And I was put in with the geographers under Agnes Allen, who was the head of the geography department. And I was included in there with them. There is some overlap between geography and geology, of course, but not a lot.
And, tell me about Agnes.
Okay, well, she'd been in there for a long time. She'd been an advisor to a number of committees, and I know, and before I ever came. But she was officially the chairman of the geography department, and the lone geologist was put in with the geographers under her supervision.
Okay.
Now I didn't know, I knew what I was coming to because I had stopped at the interview on my way up the previous summer when I was going to do the last check of my field work during my dissertation. It was up in Idaho.
So this was 1960 that you interviewed and you got the job in 61?
I had been interviewed in, would have been in 61 and got the job for 62.
Thank you.
So I think that's the way it worked. Anyway, I came in 62, in the fall of 62.
Who interviewed you in 61? Do you remember?
Yeah, President Walkup and Agnes Allen. She was not very excited about me coming. She thought I was too, I'm not sure what she thought. I think she felt like I just wasn't forceful enough or something. I don't know. Anyway,
Did she think maybe you were too young and lacked teaching experience?
I was 32 years old.
Okay.
I wasn't too young.
All right. Okay. What do you remember about President Walkup?
Well, he was a very effective president and was there, I think he's the longest of any president at the university. He'd been there some years when I came and he lasted a number of years after. And when he retired, he and his wife moved to a house just down the street from where we lived. So we got to visit with him and go caroling with them at Christmas time and so on. So that was a nice association. But apparently Dr. Walkup felt good enough about it that he made the offer.
Okay.
And I accepted. I mean, it's the first offer I had gotten. You know, I had applied at University of Idaho, which is where I used to live, in Idaho. I mean, it was in the same state. It was way up north.
The light could be there. But,
okay. And I'd applied at...
Is that better?
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah.
Okay.
I think at the University of Utah, they didn't really have an opening for geologists then, although I was well acquainted with one of their professors there because he had helped get me involved in the research project that I finally did, which was in Idaho and Utah, right at the Idaho border, Malad, Idaho.
Okay.
Malad, Idaho, it was called Geology of the, I got to stop and think of the official name now. Blue Spring Hills.
That was your thesis. That was your PhD thesis.
Yeah,
And
it extended from Utah into Idaho across the border.
Okay.
And the nearest town to it was Malad, Idaho. So when I worked up there this summer, I found a place to live with a a widow lady who had an apartment and a basement and a sill, so I spent my summer, a full summer and part of another summer there, working on that. And
so did you apply to other schools besides the University in Flagstaff, University of Utah, and the University of Idaho? Was it just those three?
Those are the only three that I knew of that had an opening.
Okay.
I can't even remember now how exactly I found that out, but I knew that they did have an opening.
Okay.
And there may have been others that I didn't know about. I know one of the places that I had talked to were expecting me to be able to come, you know, in the middle of the year, like in January.
Hmm.
No, I want to get a job in September. So I didn't go, and they checked with me later on to see, but sure enough, I didn't have a job then. So I don't know if they would have offered me one, and it was back in the Midwest, I probably wouldn't have done as well as I did ending up in Arizona.
So when you walked into the university here in Flagstaff, were you expected to start teaching like right away?
Yeah.
And what classes did you teach that first semester?
The beginning geology course, and I believe at the same time I had another earth science course. Now, earth science is a little broader perspective. It includes geography, geology, and, you know, physics and chemistry and all these things in a sense. It's not a whole lot different than saying physical science, but this is called earth science.
Hmm.
With a strong emphasis on geology,
okay,
and geography. So that was my main teaching assignment that first semester.
Just those two classes?
I think so.
Okay.
If there was another one, I can't remember. And it seemed like all I did was prepare for classes.
I was going to say, having never done it before.
I had never done it that way before, but it went pretty well. I felt good about it at the end of the year. And by this time, the university, the State College, it was not a university yet, it was State College, they were applying to become a university.
Okay.
And President Walkup had a lot to do, of course, of getting that finally approved, and was effective in getting it accomplished, along with others. But anyway, the campus is growing, student body is growing. And so, let me add another course or two, beginning geology courses.
Okay.
You know, like mineralogy, study of minerals.
Great.
Several other courses like that. I wasn't very good at teaching mineralogy, so I wanted someone help, so they allowed us to hire a second person.
Would this be in the spring of 63?
Yeah.
Wow. That was fast.
Person. Yeah. And
who did you hire that spring? Do you remember?
I have to think of his name for a minute. He had some experience in geology. That was a good thing. He'd worked in the oil patch in South America.
Wow.
And had done some exploration elsewhere, and so it was helpful to have him.
What about structural geology?
That was another thing we added right away was structural geology.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So mineralogy and structural—that's pretty core fundamentals of geology.
Yes,
that's important.
Yes, that's true.
Did you teach the structural or did this
new
person?
No, I think he taught the structural geology.
Okay.
And mineralogy, and I continued with physical geology and earth science. And
okay,
there may have been a third. I can't remember. There may have been a third course in there that I can't think of now.
Let's back up a minute. When was the first time you actually went to Grand Canyon and looked over the edge?
That fall, I knew I needed to know more about the Grand Canyon, so I just took a trip up there on my own and walked down into the Grand Canyon. I didn't go all the way at the bottom. The first time,
okay.
Went down quite a ways.
Smart. Okay.
I could see all the marvelous possibilities there.
So,
and in the succeeding years, for some time, for at least the next 10 years, all of us who were on the faculty in geology considered it was part of the campus. You know, we just our courses involved going to the Grand Canyon if you're teaching geology.
Yeah.
Because he always had an excuse to go to the Grand Canyon with his students and so on.
That's really neat. The other thing I want to ask about, speaking of part of the campus, was the peaks and volcanology.
Mm-hmm.
Because we have, before you get to Grand Canyon, you go through all this,
all that stuff,
all of the fairly recent volcanism.
Yes.
Did that play into your purview as well?
Yes, it was certainly helpful to have, because here was a lot of volcanic activity and young volcanic cinder cones, as well as these older one peaks that had worn down quite a bit. So within, I can't remember the exact time, but within another 2 years, we had other courses going, and so we invited a third person in geology. They had allowed us to hire a third person in geology.
Wow.
We now had three. So with those three, we proposed that the university allow us to establish an official undergraduate degree in geology, which they had never had before.
Okay.
Which included the basic courses, physical and historical geology, mineralogy, petrology, structure, stratigraphy, and the earth science. The earth science course is really for people who wanted to teach earth science in high school.
Okay.
And so I did spend some time with that for several years, really, and it was helpful, and then it developed into something more later on, in fact. So.
But within 3 years.
We were still under Agnes Allen, I think, that first of that year there were three. But ultimately, they let us separate and be our own department, separate from geography.
Do you remember what year that was?
No.
64
About 60, probably about 65.
Okay.
Something like that.
So
and eventually, for a time, because by this time Agnes Allen was getting close to retirement. She'd been here many years. She'd had a long history here.
Okay.
And so she was getting close to retirement. So she eventually had, because after those first few years, we had more in geology than they had in geography.
Ooh.
Because it was a very going program. Oil had been discovered in parts of Arizona and the Southwest, and so things were happening. And we went up to five people, and by the time we got five, we really had a fairly well-rounded department. We had some who were specialized in mineralogy and in structural geology, and we got one eventually who was working in geophysics. I can't remember exactly the specific dates of all these things happened, but within a few years we had a sizable and very active and very strong department. And we're producing students for go on to graduate school somewhere.
Okay. Let's back up a bit. You arrived in Flagstaff in 1962.
Right.
What did Karma think about all this?
Well, she knew that I was really struggling to make it work. And got even more complicated because at that time they were short of English teachers. She had taught high school English several years before we were married, even, and 1 year after we were married, before I was drafted. President Walker came to her and said, could you teach a course in freshman English?
Oh. Now, she has a number of children to take care of.
Yeah. We had three children, yep.
How did that all work out?
Well, we managed it somehow that I could usually be home when she was gone.
Okay.
And she could be home when I was gone. We worked it out. It was not. She just had one class, you know, so she just had maybe 1 hour every three days a week, or three or four, whatever it was. So she wasn't gone all day. She was. They were when she first got the offer, and he told her how much they were going to pay her. She declined. He said that's not enough. And then she was thinking of the whole year. He was just thinking of one semester at a time. So when she found out, she said, "Okay, that was okay. It's all
okay."
Right. But at the end of that first year, she said, "I will do it this year, but I don't want to continue this, and I'm going to save the money I earn, and we're going to buy the other furniture that we haven't had that we need, including that big chest right there and another one just like it.
Nice.
And over there, nice oak furniture."
Mm-hmm.
So she just did that 1 year.
Was that in the fall of 1962?
No. Let's see. Yeah, I guess it was. It actually was.
Wow.
That was.
Yep. So that was like, not only do you arrive, you've got to build your own classes.
Yeah,
she at least had taught English.
Yeah. And she was very comfortable with it. And I know we had some, in one case, we had the same student in both my class and her class.
Okay.
We compared notes on how he was doing. But
did she enjoy that?
What?
Did she enjoy that?
Yes, except she just said she didn't want to be tied down that much with the young children at home.
Yeah.
So she didn't want to continue.
Okay.
But she did that 1 year. She just said, if I earn enough this year to buy this furniture, I'm not going to have to do this again. So she didn't. She didn't do it again.
Okay. Nice. Where were you living? Where did you rent a place to stay when you came to Flagstaff?
Okay, when we first came, we just got a hold of he was a part-time realtor, and he was trying to get a lot of businesses, but he had a place for us in East Flagstaff.
Do you remember his name? It wasn't George Babbitt.
No.
Okay.
Just a small time operator, but he did have some houses there. So we rented a house, and it wasn't very good. It was just the best we could find on short notice, you know, and we took it.
We only
stayed in it a year, and then we moved to another house over on this side of the camp, right in West Flagstaff, which was near the campus.
In 1962, where was East Flagstaff? And where was the east side of town?
Oh, it's the other side of the hill. You know, you go over the hill to go over where the Geological Survey Station is,
mm-hmm.
down the other side. That's East Flagstaff on the other side.
Right there. So this is where today's... Was this Sunnyside today's... You go over past the GS, and then you come down. There's a school is there, and there's...
Yeah, there's a high school there. Coconino High School is there.
Yep.
Yep.
So that was East Flagstaff.
That was East Flagstaff, yeah.
Okay.
So that's where we were. And we moved on this, and we moved on the other side, closer. We had a house right on the Rio de Flag. And I thought about that the other day when I learned that the lower Rio de Flag had flooded over dramatically. But we were on the upstream end of it where it wouldn't, we rarely ever saw any water in it at all. Just a little trickle.
Mm.
And in fact, one time I got... Well, I saw it going down there, and I had some plants that I planted in the front yard. I worked out a system to suck some water up there and that little trickle that was in there.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, I'm sure that wasn't the area that was affected by the flood. It was downstream that we saw, that I read about anyway.
Yeah.
But we were there for about 3 years, and then... This same realtor that we had dealt with had a big house, a nice big, an old house. In fact, it had been lived in by the Babbitts, one of the Babbitt families. Stone.
Moencopie.
Volcanic rock.
Oh, volcanic, okay.
And then they had added on, It was just a fairly simple house, but it was a two-story house, big, tall store, two-story, with all this rock work. And then they added on a lower wooden built apart. It made it look a little different, but that was their living room. And then the upstairs were bedrooms and the kitchens downstairs and so on.
Was this downtown area? Where was this?
It was at 622 North San Francisco Street, close to downtown.
Okay. 622 North San, yeah. So you go up the hill from downtown, and then it levels out.
Yep.
And you're up in that level area there?
Just before, yeah. If you go up there far enough, you run into the hospital complex
that's
there now. Well,
yes.
It was south of that.
Mm-hmm.
But 612, you see, it's six blocks up.
Okay.
And the beginning of the third of the seventh block, I guess, going up straight up from.
So a little far to walk to campus, but you could bike it if you wanted, easy.
Yeah.
This is downhill all the way going there.
Yeah, it's downhill, yeah.
Uh-huh. You have to work hard going home.
I didn't really bike very much at that time because it was quite a climb to get up that slope that far. So we moved into it, and we had these three children that we needed to deal with, and it only had two bedrooms, I think, and we needed more than that. So we built on to it. We built on to that addition, that wooden addition. We duplicated it with a whole step above, which is two more bedrooms and a bathroom upstairs.
Great. On top of the existing wooden wooden extension?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And that made it really a very handy place for us. And it was an older house, and we were concerned about it because it was an old furnace system, you know, that was still not very efficient sometimes, but it worked okay.
Was it oil or gas?
It was I think it was oil.
There was a tank?
Yeah, I don't know where it was. I can't remember now. It was either oil or gas. It functioned on oil or gas.
Okay.
But it was an old system. You know? It wasn't a very modern one, and I was really concerned. But it worked okay.
All right. And then I wanted to ask you about a professor in the math department who would have arrived about the same. No, he was there earlier. I'm sorry. His name was Harvey Butchert.
Yeah.
He would have been in the math department.
Yep. Everybody knew him.
What are your first recollections of him?
He was an inveterate Grand Canyon hiker. Okay. He used to spend his weekends at the Grand Canyon.
Okay.
And he didn't just go down the main trails. He'd go down one trail and try to hitch a ride on a raft down to the next place and come out. So he knew, after a few years of this sort of thing, he was the expert on places where you could walk down to the Grand Canyon and places where you couldn't. He tried most of them. He just became a regular famous Grand Canyon hiker. And even up to his very old age he was, you know, he was, everybody recognized him. If you wanted to know what it was like in this part of America, ask Harvey Butchert. He'd been there.
Okay, okay.
He clearly took some river trips too, but that time, I can't remember when he first came, but we soon all got to know about him, and most of us, I think, were a little bit uneasy of ever trying to hike with him because he was such an inveterate hiker, so strong and active. And I remember encountering him on the trail in the Grand Canyon several times, you know, seeing coming up or going down, and here was Harvey Butchert.
Okay.
I know his wife got a little bit impatient with him that every weekend that's where he went.
Did you meet Roma, his wife? Did you visit with her?
Not very much. I just met her briefly, so I didn't really know her very well.
Okay.
But him I got to know fairly well. Yeah.
Did
he
you
was also an inveterate chess player? Loved to play chess.
Did you play with him?
No, I didn't, because I wasn't a chess player.
Okay. Okay. And then, well, Bob Packard, sort of going through the names of the math department, Packard was another amazing hiker in that math department with Harvey. And,
yeah, I didn't know him very well. I remember the name, but I didn't know.
Okay. So as a new, well, you weren't new, like you say, you were in your 30s, but I was thinking as a new professor coming to Flagstaff, interested in geology, what were some of the things you found right away that really interest you or surprised you in geology of area?
Well, of course, most of it was new to me. I had read about the Grand Canyon, but I'd never been there. I'd worked on stratigraphy in Idaho and Utah and California, but never in Arizona. So it was all new to me. But it was just a marvelous, as I say, we considered that the Grand Canyon was sort of an appendage to the campus. It was part of the campus.
Would you take your students there for either an overnight hike?
The beginning, the two beginning classes we had, and I taught them part of the time, all of us taught, I had a turn with them.
Okay.
Physical and historical geology. Physical geology was the first introduction and everything, which is where you learn about rocks and fossils and stratigraphy and layering and structure and faults and so on. And then the next one, historical geology. This is largely based on stratigraphy and the fossil record. Those are the two fundamental courses that we started all our students with. And we expected our historical geology students to take a trip into the Grand Canyon and stay two nights and look at and sample stratigraphic section there. And try to measure a part of it just for the experience of it, because this is what stratigraphers do, you know, and studying things. And they, so, and most of them did. If they had a physical handicap, we would of course let it go. But if they could go, we expect them to go. Well, the first time I went, I was following Agnes Allen's recommendation. Is that we had. When the students came out, because it was such a grueling hike to come out for all the students, she recommended that we have mules come down and meet us down at the top of the inner gorge, which is about a fifth of the way out of the canyon, I guess. And I did that the first year, but only the first year. After that, I just said, the students are going to go down, they're going to be able to, they're going to have to walk out. We're not taking them out on mules.
Well, I would imagine it would be expensive.
Yes. Oh, yeah, it was.
And you'd have to wait for the mules if the mules weren't there.
Yep. It was effective, of course. I'm going to assure that everybody got out. But
yes.
We expected everybody, if they could go down, they could probably be able to go up if they knew we start early in the morning.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And do that. And we continued that for a number of years.
And were you just going down to the
Phantom Ranch?
Phantom Ranch, the Bright Angel Campground.
Then we could sit with them. The next day they would go around and look at the local stratigraphy and you know, and examples and so on.
Mm-hmm.
Then the third day they would come out.
Okay.
So they just got kind of a feel for what it was like to be in the canyon, but we did have some assignments for them, you know, to look at the rock layers and identify what kind of sedimentary rocks they were and what kind of fossils we could find in the Bright Angel Shale and so on. And it was a good everybody could find trilobites in the Bright Angel Shale.
I've got to ask you, I have never found a trilobite in the Bright Angel Shale.
Really?
Never.
Have you looked?
Yes.
Hmm.
I'm just clueless. I have never, a trax, yes, but an actual trilobite, no.
Well, they're there. They occur in certain places where they're well exposed.
Okay.
If I had time and could still do it, I'd take you down and show you where you could find some trilobites.
I would love to do that, because I'm just like, I am trilobite poor.
Yeah.
That's one of the things I was going to ask you is, where are the trilobites? Having walked miles and miles of the Bright Angel Shale and not found one.
Well,
when did you start that? Was that in 62 or 63?
It would have been in 63.
Okay.
if I did it the first year. I'm not even sure I had him do it the first year because I was all alone teaching then.
Right.
Probably, realistically, it was the second year before we really got into this, because then we were teaching physical and historical geology.
Okay.
And the historical geology students were expected to do the Grand Canyon unless they were physically not able to, and then they could substitute something.
Okay. Back in 1964, the permit system hadn't been even put in place at Bright Angel.
The what?
The permit system to camp there.
Oh.
I think it was just a first come, first serve.
Yeah.
And then maybe it was in the late 60s they started a permit system for that.
Yeah.
Did you have, you would have had to get permits then from the Park Service for the class.
Yes, right.
Were you able to use a special administrative permit for that because it was a scientific endeavor?
I don't know that we had to make it a special one, and we did make reservations each time with the Park Service.
Okay.
And for a while that was okay, but finally our number of geology students in physical and historical geology got so big.
Oh.
That so we take them down. They take the whole class. Well, the class is very big. You can't do it because eventually the Park Service put a limit of 10 people in a campground in a group.
Or 11. Was it 11 or 10? I forget.
10. I think okay. We had to have 10.
Okay.
Maybe it was 10 plus a leader. I don't remember. Mm. But we were limited to 10 students anyway. And
right. 10 students would be students and a leader. That's right. For
yes,
11.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So how do we manage that? Well, I can remember a few times when we would spend, I would go down with the first group and a graduate student. He'd stay with them the second night, and then the third night we'd send the graduate student out with the students and send another graduate student down with a second group.
What a good idea.
And then a third group. And a few times I did that with three groups. I'd just stay down there, you know, for
right.
about, what, 5 or 6 days.
So you had your own permit for 5 nights or six
yeah,
nights.
Yeah.
And then they would come down on their permits.
Yep. And just go
what
back.
A great idea.
It lasted for a while, but finally it just overwhelmed us. And we finally had to give up on doing that on a regular, required basis in historical geology. We had to change our historical geology class to some extent and do other things and try to get them into the Grand Canyon to see it, but not to go down and stay for 2 nights. Because it got to be just too many. We'd have, if you have 60 students in the class, and you do the whole 10 at a time, I mean, you got to do it 6 times.
Right.
We couldn't do that. We couldn't manage. That was just too complicated.
Or you have to have 2 teachers down there and then wheel all these groups down to them.
Yeah. That was too much. One was enough. So that would represent, and I can't remember the exact time when that transition had to take place, but I know it was some years after we'd been there. And then after we'd had about six faculty members, we came back to the administration again and said, now we want to offer a master's degree in geology.
Wow.
I remember the committee that was listening to us when we got we were well to be sure we showed it, so we made a very good pitch, and when they said, okay, we got it, you go. You're okay. Yes, you can offer a master's degree.
Wow. Just like that.
Yeah. We had to get a permission from a faculty committee, and then okay. The president would have to approve it, of course, which he did.
Was Walkup still the president?
Yeah.
Okay.
He was for most of my career. He
okay.
was the president.
Okay. Okay. Do you remember roughly what year that was?
No. I'm thinking it was after we'd been there, after I'd been there about, I want to say, about 7 years or eight. I can't say. I was there for 32 years. I think by the seventh or eighth year is when we offered the master's degree and started.
So 1970-ish.
Yeah, somewhere
71.
In
71. And then for the master's program, was that a a class-based, or would the students have to write a paper?
And then they do a thesis, a master's thesis of some kind.
Okay. And that meant that you professors then had to come up with ideas for the kids.
Yeah, right. Yep.
What were some of the more enjoyable thesis that you presented to students that they came away with gold stars?
Well, I know one of them worked on the fossils in the Bright Angel Shale.
Okay.
And another one on stratigraphy. I mean, there's the layers that are present in the Grand Canyon at various levels. And there's something about their fossil locations, or fossil occurrences, rather, and their best location and so on. And the others, you know, others began to do structural geology things.
Okay.
The structures in the Grand Canyon and how they formed, and lots of major faults, and some folded beds in the Grand Canyon, and some that have been turned up pretty steeply, and so with lots of things like that. And I wasn't involved in structural geology specifically so much, so I didn't do as much with that, but we did people there who did. We had staff members who did by this time. And it really went very successfully from there on for quite a while. I don't know exactly when that master's degree started, but something like that.
Hmm.
And
I would imagine they could work on volcanology if they wanted as well.
Yep.
You mentioned oil, and I was thinking about the Aneth oil fields out by Mexican Hat and Bluff and that country out there.
Yep.
So not too far away from Flagstaff, there's a whole amazing amount of geology to work on.
Yep, there is, yep.
Hmm.
And most of the students did pick something that was close by, but not always. Some of them picked something that was far away somewhere. If their professors had something in mind for them to tackle, and they wanted to do it, they could do it. So,
like the Blue Hills, and
how
you managed your PhD working on something far away, and it worked out.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
Okay. What else do you remember about the early days of teaching at NAU? And this was no computers.
Yeah, there were no computers. Yep.
Chalkboards. And
chalkboard, a lot of chalkboard and slides. We used, after a few years, we all had a lot of slides we could use in showing, you know, projectors of slides, 35-meter slide, 35-millimeter slide.
Okay.
Projector.
When did you start breaking away from just the typical Bright Angel Trail to the Bright Angel Campground and back? When did you start exploring more of the canyon?
Well, when we were doing master's theses. I mean, some of the students came up with master's theses. You know, we want to do such and such a canyon. We did the geology of a canyon. I'll tell you about one example later on. But a number of the students would select an area in the Grand Canyon away from the Bright Angel Trail where it was accessible, and there were various places where they were. Either come down from the north or come down from the south. And so a number of students did that, and I helped compile a list of all of the theses done in the Grand Canyon. Gus Cotera, who was one of the faculty members that came later on, when he retired, moved back east, he wrote me and said, I want to submit a list of all of the master's theses done in the Grand Canyon by our students.
Wow.
And so he had me compile that list as far as I could. He knew some of them, of course, and I did too, and I tried to compile. I just went through and looked at all the records we had of master's theses in the Grand Canyon, asked some of the students who could help me. They could easily spot some of them for me.
And
so I'm assuming he submitted that to the library here.
Okay.
I don't know, because I didn't ever see it, but I sent him the list of all the ones I had.
Good.
And then that gets me now to this one student that it really did get me going with things later on. George Billingsley, he grew up in a rural area in Arizona, came to the Grand Canyon just absolutely fascinated with geology, but it had very little background in it in high school, or very, and had to really struggle with his geology classes. But he was so enthusiastic about it that he did pretty well, even though he had to struggle. He had to struggle just to pass the undergraduate courses. I just remember that when I was his advisor, and he was struggling with some of these classes, and I remember I suggested some that he should take and some that he might not be, need to take. And when he finished his undergraduate degree, then he wanted to go for a master's degree. He was really ambitious. And so he selected Tuckup Canyon, which is one of the tributaries out in the central western Grand Canyon. So he did a geologic map of the geology of Tuckup Canyon.
Oh, wow.
And he took me with him a few times because I was supervising his thesis. So, and it was pretty hairy. You could get down. You could start at the top and come down the canyon, but then you had to come back out. And that was not easy to do. It was possible, but it was not easy. We had some cliffs on the way out and so on.
So there's a road that goes out to a stock trail that goes down to that big lava flow, that big pan of basalt there, and then the main drainage is on, I think, the east side of that, and then it winds its way down through the narrows of the Red Wall, and then it got some cliffs, some rappelling you might have to do there to get all the way down to the river.
Yeah.
Did he go, so that whole area, and this would have been in the 1970s?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Or late,
I bet getting permits was
maybe,
easy for
maybe
that.
1980s, maybe 1980s, when, when George Billingsley came along. But
okay.
Anyway, he did a good job with it, and it was really a struggle, but he did okay with it, and so he got his master's degree, and then he managed to go to work for the Geological Survey as mapping in the Grand Canyon, because that's what his whole thesis had been on, and he was good at it. He learned to be good at it.
Great.
And so, and right about this time, and this would have been now in the, let's see, clear back to early, when did I finish? In the 1980s, anyway, in the early 1980s. In Tuckup Canyon, he had discovered, and other people had seen the same thing in a few other places, namely Eddie McKee, who was a long-time Grand Canyon geology study researcher and did much of his life there. The rock unit in the western Grand Canyon that was different than any others that we had seen, and it was between the Red Wall limestone, which is a great cliff former, and the stair step stacking red beds of the Supai above. This was in between them. It was between the two. Nobody had ever noticed it before because it was so darn hard to get to. You can't just go out there and look at it. You know, it's halfway down the canyon wall, right on top of the Red Wall cliff.
And to get to the top of the Red Wall, out there is hard.
Oh, yes. Either way, either lower down or up, it's awfully interesting. Well, George had been involved in it. He'd seen some of that in the Tuckup Canyon area. By this time, we knew enough about it that we needed to know something more, because this outcrop is in many cases just a lens shape. I mean, here's the Supai right on top of the Red Wall, and you come along, and all of a sudden here's a lens-shaped deposit.
So
it is not Supai, it is not Red Wall.
The deposit would only be where the Red Wall had eroded away into a little valley.
Yep.
And then that formation would be in that, and then the Supai would roll over the top of it.
Right. Yep.
Okay.
And so to get that, that meant that the sea level had to come up just enough to fill up those little depressions that were in there, and then they went up by level, and then there'd be an interruption for a while, and then the supply comes in on top. But there were lots of them, turned out. And so one day, George and I, but by this time George was working with the Geological Survey, and so he could get helicopter help.
Ooh.
Which was marvelous to know. So we had a helicopter can. There were four of us involved. George and I were one team, and then another couple of grad students were another team. We had them plunk us down in places where we had seen what appeared to be these lens-shaped outcrops and leave us all there overnight.
Okay.
To look and see what we could find.
Okay.
The intent being, is there enough here to really make this a real study? And so...
Where, do you remember roughly where they would leave you?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. What were the locations? Where did they drop you off?
Well, near Tuck Up Canyon for one place.
Okay.
We knew they were there.
Yep.
And a place farther out, all the way out almost to the westernmost Grand Canyon. There was a place there where they put us down.
I'm thinking separation or surprise or tin can of bits or...
Yeah.
All of that stuff out there.
Well, and this one out in the far west had a huge lens.
Wow.
Several hundred feet thick.
Wow.
It had been eroded that deeply and then filled up with sediment in the Red Wall Limestone.
Okay.
And then topped over by the supai on top. So apparently that, we did the interpretation we were beginning to see was that this... The Red Wall Limestone was exposed for some time to erosion.
Mm.
And erosion wore some stream valleys into it, and then the sea came in and flooded it and filled up the stream valleys and deposited limestone and sandstone. And there were some fossils in there that had never been seen in the Grand Canyon before.
Wow.
They were not brand new to the world, but they were brand new to the Grand Canyon.
Nice.
Because it was a different age. It was a period... That the people who really worked on this carefully with the timing suggest it's about 10 million years.
Okay.
For the time those valleys were cut until they were filled by these.
So this would be an unconformity.
Yeah.
Between the supai above and the red wall below.
Yep.
Where the geological erosion material would have filled up this area and then eroded down again.
Yes.
And then the supai built up.
Yeah.
On top.
Yeah.
Okay.
And of course, some of the supai is non-marine, and some of it is marine, and so. But it covers all these things, and most of these U-shaped deposits, lens-shaped deposits, were in the western Grand Canyon. They were thicker and thicker in the west. They got thinner and thinner as we came east.
Okay.
Finally, they disappeared.
Hmm.
And in the easternmost Grand Canyon, you don't see that much there. There are one or two places where you can see a little bit of a...
Tiny. Lens. Okay.
And so then we figured, well, this is really a new formation. We'd have to do something with it. What are we going to call it? Well, George was thinking about calling it the Shiverts Formation because it's out of the Shiverts Plateau, where the big outcrops are.
Okay.
No, we don't want that.
Why not?
And then we thought, well, I didn't like the Shiverts.
Okay.
And then we said, well, one of the finest outcrops we've seen that we have measured and looked at is in Surprise Canyon.
Okay.
It's been such a surprise, why don't we just name it the Surprise Formation? So we've tried that. Well, no, you can't do that because there's already a Surprise Formation in California.
Ooh.
You can't duplicate formation names in the United States. That would be confusing.
Okay.
So we said, right, we'll call it the Surprise Canyon Formation.
Oh.
With Surprise Canyon being the type section of the
thing. So maybe that's where the helicopter took you out west, was to Surprise Canyon.
Yeah, at some point it did, yes.
Okay.
And you see, that one helicopter trip was the one that really got us started with it, because he put the two of us down in different places, We stayed overnight and looked at outcrops, and the idea was to come back tomorrow and hope the helicopter could find us, remember where he put us, and he did. Is it worth studying? And the answer was yes. There's lots to do there, and so we did. And so
wow.
George and I essentially both worked on that. He doing it from the Geological Survey perspective when he could get to it. And once in a while, he would get a helicopter on loan as part of his job, and he and I could go to the helicopter and say, we want to go there. We know there's an outcrop there. We want to go measure it.
Nice. Okay.
We couldn't get there without a long, long hike in and out. You know, the helicopter
right.
would just plunk us down there and pick us up 2 days later and take us home again.
And this was in the 1980s?
Yeah.
Okay.
We ended up with it. It took several years really to get it all together, of course, and we finally published it in a Geological Survey publication, first giving it a name, and then later on we came back and did a more thorough job of and put together a whole. In fact, George actually got to be the senior editor of this paper where it
nice.
Describes this about surprise formation.
Okay.
That was the most exciting research that I had ever done in my life in geology.
Wow.
Because every time we went out, you know, we'd find something new.
Yeah.
Sometimes new fossils, certainly a new outcrop.
Hmm. Fun. Very fun.
It was really exciting. I mean, it's a fairly simple thing. It's just a little piece of the Grand Canyon history,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
but it's a piece that had been missed for all these years because it's so difficult to get to.
That's right. That's right.
And
interesting.
Nobody had been able to see it and get back and talk about it.
Right. So George in the 1970s spent some time working on the river as a river guide.
Yes, yes. That's where he first started working. Before he got from working for the survey, he was working as a river guide.
So he finished his master's and then was working as a river guide.
And his wife, too. They were both river guides.
Right.
Yeah, they were both river guides in the summer.
And they were big hikers, too. They
yeah,
were doing
yeah.
all kinds of hiking here and there.
They were enthusiastic hikers.
Is that's Susan, isn't it?
Yes, uh-huh. Yep.
Yeah. Gosh, we've been going almost an hour here. Yeah.
Have we?
Yeah. Time's been flying right along here.
okay.
Maybe this is a good time to put a comma in this interview series. Before we stop, though, I want to ask you, what else do you remember about the Surprise Canyon Formation? Did you get your master's students, other students, working on that as well?
With George was the only one who worked on that specifically.
Just George?
Yeah.
Okay. Okay.
And he didn't just do that. He just did this. He did the geology of Tuckup Canyon, but there was Surprise Canyon in it.
Okay. And what do you remember what it was that attracted George to Tuckup? I mean, it is fascinating. There's volcanism out there.
It's a very challenging place to get in and out of.
Okay.
And one that, where the geology wasn't known in detail down the mm-hmm. canyon. You could see it from the river. You could see it from above. But
right. There were some historic mines out there, too.
Yes.
So it's a pretty rich area in geology.
Yeah, yeah it is. I don't know much about the mining part of it because I didn't get involved in that, but there were some
okay.
mines out there.
Well, certainly just the volcanism alone. I mean, there's a fairly fresh flow of that whole volcanic pan there in
yeah.
that in the big valley. And
yep.
and then off to the east, there's this little volcanic neck there. On the east arm of Tuckup. I don't know
yeah.
if you remember that or not. So it's an odd place out there. It's pretty neat.
Yeah, I can't remember that specifically. But,
okay,
Yeah.
Nice. All right, well, with that, this will conclude part 3 of a Grand Canyon oral history interview with Stan Buse. Today is Monday, August 23rd. 2021. My name is Tom Martin, and Stan, thank you so very much.
You bet. Thank you.